Blog Talk Radio.
You stay out half the night picking up a perfect stranger.
And welcome to On the Leopard Carpet with Lady Flava. My special guest tonight is the amazing singer, songwriter, also musician, journalist, and author, Dwight Hobbs. He will be stepping on the leopard carpet with me, sharing his story, his accomplishments, projects that we can expect to experience from him in the near future, along with, of course, getting a taste of his musical flavor. I want to welcome you, Mr. Hobbs, to the leopard carpet with me.
Hi, Lady Flava. Thanks.
I am so excited about having you on, Dwight. I get a sense that you are a character, but I think that more than just that, you have, you know, some great stories to share and some great accomplishments in your life around being a creative soul. You know, I mentioned that you're a singer-songwriter. Now, you also play the guitar, correct?
Yeah.
Do you play any other musical instruments?
No, I haven't played clarinet since I was in high school, and I was lousy at
okay.
at that. My music teacher was so grateful when I showed an aptitude for poetry, because he said, "Dwight,
okay.
You're sure not a clarinetist."
Okay. I played clarinet also, like in elementary school and middle school, and I just really had to hang that up. I think that was my big brother's thing. It wasn't really my thing. But, okay, where do we even start with you? You know, I want to talk about, you know, your music, the journalist
okay.
side of you, the plays that you have written and have been performed, and, of course, your up-and-coming book. Okay, you started writing, I take it, in elementary school or high school, as you were talking about just now.
When I was like 13, back in junior high, I started writing poetry. Yeah, I started imitating Bob Dylan. Yeah,
okay.
That's when it all started.
That's where the creative side just really kind of came out in you.
Well, it's where I found some place to. I guess you could say I found some place to hang it because, you know, Dylan really inspired me. I had never seen or heard of anything like Bob Dylan before, and I was just amazed that, you know, somebody could do that. So I decided to. Well, actually, I didn't decide to give it a shot. I was in awe, and this fella named Bobby Casso, who I was like I said, about 13. Bobby was 26, and he said, "You know, while you're sitting there with your jaw on the floor about Bob Dylan, you know, you can do that too." And I looked at him. I looked at him like he was crazy. I said, "What?" I said, "You know, it's like nobody can do that." He says, "Well, have you tried it?" So I tried it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby, you know, if the writing hadn't been any good, Bobby would have said, "Well, no, you're right, you can't do it." But
okay.
Bob, you know, but Bobby said, "Yeah, man, you know, you've got ability, so stick with it." And I did.
So you started out as just a writer then, as
yeah,
a young
poet.
Person. Okay,
yeah.
As a poet, okay. And
mm-hmm.
when was the first time that you ever were published, Dwight?
Well, in high school, I guess. You know.
Okay, like
yeah,
in a newsletter or something.
Junior, I'm sorry, professionally, you mean?
Well, no, just any time that your writing, you know, was, like,
well,
published, whether it be a school newspaper or...
Yeah, they had a literary magazine called Prism back in junior high school.
Okay.
Was it junior high or high school? In junior high, this teacher named Jay Gullo, he put out a kind of little ragtag stenciled magazine from his poetry writing club. And then when I got to high school, I kept at it and had a magazine called Prism, which I got published in every year when I was in high school.
Okay.
Yeah,
and so then is that where? So when did journalism really come into play for you then?
You know, I'll tell you when journalism came to me. When I failed it in college, I flunked out of journalism in college.
No way.
I was a theater student, and
okay.
I was taking journalism because it was one of the things that you could take as a requirement for your English studies, and I couldn't get the hang of it to save my life, and I was failing the course, and my teacher came over and said, "Listen, I think you better drop out because you know you're just not getting it."
How interesting is that?
So I did. And I stuck with, you know, with the you know, the plays and the songwriting and stuff like that. And,
okay.
And to this day, I refuse to call myself a journalist. You know what I mean? I've learned how to get the hang of writing a news story. Sure.
Okay.
But you know, when people call me a writer, you know, I look at them like, you know, like they just puked or something, because it's like, I mean, when they call me a reporter. You know, I look at them, you know, like they just farted. It's like, nah, I'm not a reporter. I'm not a journalist. I'm a writer. You know, I write. And it took long enough, but I finally got the facility by which to also write, you know, not just short stories and plays and, you know, creative stuff, but the, you know, articles for, you know, for newspapers. Can I sneak in a little bit for my cheat sheet here, some stuff that I want to make sure that...
Of course. Because
it segues into that. One of the coolest things about writing, you know, articles, you know, what people call journalism for me, has been some of the people that I've had a chance to write about, and three, you know, that I want to speak of, because, you know, you can access them on the internet, and they're not just something local that you know, that I've done here. But,
okay,
you know, listeners of Flavor, you know, can go Google these people and find out more about them. And, you know, they're Joe Monte, Roger Lear, and Anthony Porter. I've had a chance in my new assignment for Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, a paper I write for, they gave me a fourth column I do for them. It's called Entertainment Etc., and I got a chance to write about Joe Monte. She's an emerging actor out of L.A., and she's one of those veterans who are about to become an overnight success, if you know what I mean. You know,
okay,
it's like when you see somebody who like just pops up and is like, oh my goodness, where have they been all my life? You know, where they have been is in the trenches. And she gave me a really fascinating interview. Turns out she had worked back when Della Reese had her TV show, Touched by an Angel, that
okay,
Joe had worked with Della Reese, Lou Gossett Jr., the woman from what you call it. Vivica Fox? I forget. But Joe has worked with the you know, some pretty big names. And this year, she's in this movie, Joshua Tree, that she just finished wrapping with Michael Madsen and Steve Bauer. She's gonna star in Venus Flytrap, a TV type series, and she's really phenomenal. She has got, you know, she holds a character like glue.
Okay.
I saw her on YouTube. I'm sorry. Did you want to jump in? Jump in there with something?
No, I'm just listening to you. I think it's very interesting, you know, what you're saying. And I guess my question would be, you know, how did you connect with her? But definitely, you know, finish what you were saying.
It's one thing I got to give, you know, the social networks on the internet, you know, your space and this space and that, you know, and face
right,
face and so forth, you know,
right,
is that, you know, you wind up meeting people that you never met, you know,
right,
and Joe was one. I saw her bio, and she had some clips from when she was doing stand-up, and I was like, you know, I want to write about this individual, you know. And so I contacted her and asked her if I could write about her.
Oh, interesting.
And she didn't have any problem with that, so I did. And looking forward to writing about her again as soon as her series Venus Flytrap it premieres in 2012. So that's the next time I'll get a chance to write about it, you know, when that drops. And imaginably by that time, I won't be the only one writing about her. You know, she's that kind of triple threat talent. She can sing, dance, act, do comedy. I mean, I guess she's a fourfold threat. Roger Lear. Roger Lear is another phenomenal talent that folks can like just Google and get hold of, and I've also got to fess up that he's my old running buddy, and that's how I came to write about him, was that I met him through his mom, and Roger produced one of my songs for me called Pretty Girl. And to tell you the truth, over all the years, I've been in the studio with only two producers I didn't wind up having to fire. And Roger was one, you know. Okay. Barry Canodal at Beat Bad Records was the other one. Roger at Smooth Compositions. And I guess we're going to wind up playing Pretty Girl over the show tonight.
Definitely.
Of course
we're going to play
That's
Pretty
Roger
Girl.
Doing everything in the kitchen sink on Pretty Girl. He plays acoustic guitar, keys. He brought Thomasina Petrus in for backup. She's a big name here in Twin Cities.
Okay.
He's a strong producer, you know, and he ain't a bad singer either, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
Excuse me. But, you know, it's... So Roger is another cat, you know, that I really had, you know, it was a joy to write about, you know. And then finally, my mentor, God forbid Anthony Porter should hear me call him that, my mentor, because he don't believe in any such thing. But the fact of the matter is that I'm always going to have a lot of regard for Anthony. And at one point in time, he was kind of like a hero to me. You know, when he gave me my start in the Twin Cities as an essay writer, editing Colors magazine, and helped me, you know, get some traction with my career here. You know, and okay, but I'm gonna shut up after this. I gotta do a shameless, self-serving plug about my book. It's called Something I Said, and it's coming out under the Papyrus Publishing, Inc. imprint. So, I'm going to come up for air now.
So, when do you expect your book to come out, Dwight?
You know, we are targeting it for before the holiday shopping, before the Kwanzaa / Christmas holiday season.
This year? 2011?
Yeah, that's what we're targeting
okay.
for. But it's
okay.
more important, you know, the publisher and I agree that it's more important to do it right than it is to do it right now. So,
right.
you know, we everything is lined up on my end with regard to grooming the manuscript and, you know, little farting around with, well, I don't like this, well, I don't like that, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And now it's all the technical nuts and bolts have to be nailed down, and that's what Honora CSR, my publisher, is in the act of doing. You know, so we're gonna. As a matter of fact, we're gonna touch bases this week. We're gonna meet to see exactly where the manuscript is at, and the hope and prayer is that it'll be out in time, you know, for holiday shopping, so people can buy it all up and the first edition, you know, can sell out real quick. Then we can get another edition out. But,
there you go. I like that thinking. What style of book is it, Dwight?
I'm sorry?
What style of writing is it?
Oh, it's essays.
Okay.
You know, it's essays. Some of it's pretty controversial. I talk about domestic abuse and rape. You know, you don't hear a lot of men talking about domestic abuse and rape. And my feeling is that any man who ever had a mother, as prevalent as both domestic abuse and rape are in our society, really should have a great deal to say about domestic abuse and rape.
Sure.
You know?
Sure,
so I devoted a chapter to it. And let's see. I've got some other pretty, you know, fairly serious subjects in there. One is an essay on homelessness, and I've got some humor in there too. You know, I've got a chapter devoted to, of all things, romantic advice from a man. You know, usually, you know, you expect to get that from a woman, right?
Right.
But I figure as many times as I've been dumped, I qualify as an expert, too.
Well, I'm going to have to definitely get this book, Dwight, and maybe you can teach me a thing or two, period, throughout the book. But maybe I'll start there. No. Okay, so as a college student, is that when you started writing plays?
Seriously, yeah. Yeah, I had given it a shot back in high school. I tried to write this skit for community theater, but and the bug, you know, kind of stuck, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I used to be an actor back in high school in a community theater. And when I went to college, I got what they call actor's nerves. I didn't know what it was, but I just knew that when I got on stage, my hands started to shake. And uncontrollably, and it wasn't because I had stage fright. Because if there was any big, if I was any more of a ham, you know, you could just add cheese and bread and have a gigantic sandwich, you know. But but for some reason, I couldn't control my nerves. So I had read enough scripts that I knew how to, write one, at least as far as getting the stage directions right and make. The format, that is, you know. Okay. and just stuck at that in college until I finally managed to write a play that was worth getting put on its feet. At which point, Lady Flavor, and I'm, I could hardly believe it when it happened. The my first produced play at college, the theater department was so impressed with the job I had done that they went and got Samuel E. Wright, who had graduated like a few years before, and had him come back and act in it. Now, the name may not exactly ring a bell, but he, it turns out, starred in the world premiere of The Lion King on Broadway.
Oh, very cool.
So that's kind of a feather in my cap. I got a chance to meet him again when he did the world premiere, because they did it here in Minneapolis. So, that was interesting to get to meet him again and see that production. Have you seen that production?
I haven't seen it on stage. I bet it's absolutely amazing.
Oh, it's fantabulous. It really is.
Okay.
And I got in a scrape with a local critic from City Pages. We were both invited to be on the local public television station, and he just, sight unseen, started trashing it as being Disney and its marketing monster. And I called him out. I said, you're just being a snob out of hand. And the fact of the matter is, I had made it my business. As soon as the show got announced, I started snooping around to get a writing assignment for it, for the Minneapolis Star Tribune here in town. And one of the first things I wanted to know once I started doing my research was, what about the cultural authenticity? It's set in Africa, so how authentic is the culture? Is it like a Tarzan movie on stage, or is it actually culturally authentic? And wound up doing a feature article on just how authentic it was. And Garth Fagan, who did the dance, it turns out he culled his choreography from I think whether it was five or seven, because this was a long time ago, but from several tribes in Africa. He went to Africa and came back with his choreography. So Will Hermes, the guy from City Pages, he was talking to his southerly orifice, as it were. And, geez, I kind of got off on a tangent there, didn't I?
That's all right. This is your time, my friend. That's all right. I think that, I knew that once we got on the air and we got to talking and you started, sharing, about this journey, your creative journey, I knew it was just, there's so much to talk about. So definitely, in the near future, Dwight, we'll have you come back on, you know, and share some more and talk about your book. But, you know, I knew that you're going to have some great stories to tell. So I was like, okay, how do we squeeze this into an hour? So let me just ask you this, Dwight, because I do want to start playing some of your music. What do you consider your biggest accomplishment as a writer?
Probably my play Shelter.
Okay.
It was produced here in 2003. It's about life in a homeless shelter. And it was a hands-down hit. It got love letter reviews in the Star Tribune here, the Pioneer Press, and even City Pages, which is kind of which is a local version of the Village Voice. And it's their job not to like nothing. And even they liked it. And
okay,
I guess,
okay,
you know, that was like one really great thing, one great accomplishment about it. The other is that there was a packed house. It ran for 3 weeks, and every performance except the first Sunday matinee, I don't know, and my play isn't by itself. For some reason, the first Sunday matinee of every play I've ever seen has been cursed, you know, with a small house. But word of mouth was such that, I mean, the play was a hit, and I'm really proud of that. And the fact that we don't get a lot of black people coming to the Twin Cities theater scene, and not only were there black people in the house, I mean, an appreciable number. I'm not talking about, you know, a pocket here and a few there, but
right,
a good healthy representation. But you kept seeing night after night people that you just knew, you know, that this was probably their first time in a theater. So somehow word had got around, you know, amongst black folk that, yo, this is something that's tight. It's about the community. You need to come down because this, you know, this brother's kicking it, that kind of thing. And I know it sounds like I'm breaking my arm to pat myself on the back, but I'm telling you, that's really how the deal went down.
Well, you know what? Dwight, I think it's okay to pat yourself on the back. I mean, you know, you've worked very, very hard.
Poor dog that don't wag his own tail, huh?
So, you know, I'm really okay with that, you know. I don't know why people think that, you know, you shouldn't be able to talk and be proud about, you know, things that you have done, created, accomplished, you know. But I'll pat you on the back my own self. You know, so I know that you've written for some of the very large publications such as Reader's Digest and Essence, and all of that. So, you know, as far as like writing for those publications, what was that like?
Well, it's always good to get a credit like that after you've been busting your butt, you know, to get some place and something like that happens. You know, that's
sure,
always fantastic. You know, that's
real
great.
Real talk, sure.
You know, and you know, the money ain't bad either.
Okay.
When a paycheck right, like that comes along, you know, it's like glory hallelujah time. You know, it's like,
right,
you know, set them up, Joe, for me and my friends. You know,
right.
And it's really self-affirming. You know, it kind of gives you the impression, well, I might be in the right racket after all.
I got you. I totally do. I got you on that one because it's kind of like when Cedric James, who is a known jazz radio personality out here, 10 years, you know, veteran, you know, when he reached out to me and said, you know, Flava, I want you to join my team.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, really? You know, so I totally get that, Dwight. And I think it's okay, you know, to be recognized that way and to be, you know, appreciated and to know that those publications, you know, were interested in publishing, you know, your writing. So where can people go online, Dwight, and check you out and read some of your articles?
Well, if you just Google Dwight Hobbs, a whole bunch of stuff will come up.
Yes,
you know,
it does.
Pages, you're right. So, yeah.
Definitely Google Dwight Hobbs, Hobbes, and he's very Googleable. I have to tell you, Dwight, one of my friends out of Michigan, we were on the phone this morning. He says, I Googled him. I read some of his stuff. He's a good writer. So, yeah, definitely. He's Googleable. So I want to welcome everybody to the Leopard Carpet. My special guest tonight is Dwight Hobbs, out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, singer-songwriter. Well, I'm calling him a journalist. Maybe we'll call him a writer. And soon-to-be published author with a book coming out, possibly by holiday season this year, if not shortly after the new year.
It's called Something I Said.
Okay, and it's called Something... Something I Said, you said?
Yeah,
okay.
It's called Something I Said. Yeah,
okay.
It's which is an homage to Richard Pryor for it's titled after his second album, which was called Is It Something I Said? It's got a picture of Richard strapped to a pole, and he's about to light him on fire, and he's got this expression, and it says, "Is it something I said?" He was a big hero of mine, along with Dick Gregory.
Okay.
So I titled my column that I used to write for Insight News, Something I Said.
Mm-hmm.
I write it now for Spokesman Recorder. And I titled, you know, the book after that.
Wonderful. I love the title. And, again, I cannot wait to read it. You know, I started out in my career as Lady Flava as a book reviewer of African-American literature. And so I love reading. I was with a review team at that time called APU, which is started out of Pennsylvania. And then eventually I just moved into my own Flava Coffee House reviews and stuff. But so I love reading. And things that just kind of are different, you know, and just really catch my attention. So I'm thrilled to, you know, to have something to look forward to coming from your style, your flavor, you know, and your insight
mm-hmm.
on the stories that you wrote about. So
mm-hmm.
you know what? I just want to let you know there are several people actually on the line. So if there's anybody that would actually like to speak with Dwight, just hit the number one and I'll bring you in. There are people in the chat room, and Stephen Jerome Ferguson out of Kansas says, you have some great stories. You are a natural storyteller. Patrick, who's out of Arizona, he's saying that, you know, first-hand experience stories are always deeper and better. You can feel the emotion of his story. So, you know, I just wanted to let you know what some of the people are reaching out and saying.
That's
but,
great
you know,
to hear.
Before we go any further, I am going to play Pretty Girl, which Dwight Hobbs was speaking about just a little bit ago. And it is produced by a dear, dear friend of both Dwight and mine, Roger E. Lear. So, Pretty Girl.
Yeah.
You know that Stephen Jerome Ferguson in the chat room, he is also a jazz musician, producer out of Kansas, and he said, tight jam, love the vocal and arrangement. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's a good, strong compliment. I appreciate that.
It is. But you know what? Like I was telling you on the phone the other day, Dwight, you know, it just so happened I was sitting at my desk and I had iTunes up and all of a sudden your music started coming on. And, you know, when I download somebody's music or whatever and I'm listening or whatever, you know, then automatically it goes to music that I've already downloaded onto iTunes. And it just made me smile. It really did. There was something very comforting. And I want to say that the more I listen to your music and your musical form of storytelling, I come to appreciate it more and more. And I do consider it storytelling, but what would you consider your style of music and songwriting?
You know, I really haven't the foggiest idea. I mean, the closest I can figure, somebody, this club, the Fine Line here in town, I gave them a demo to listen to consider having me come down there and play. And they put me on for a night of something that they called a night of neo-soul. So I said, okay, well, maybe it's neo-soul. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, it's just a lot of major seven chords, you know, and some minor seven chords, you know, most of it. And I really don't know, so far as the genre, I'm not being coy. I really just don't know what to call it, except, you know, most people seem to think it's pretty good.
Right.
But other than that, what can I tell you?
You know, and it's interesting when we talk about genres, you know, I don't think there's really, I think maybe once upon a time there was a very clear definition of what, you know, somebody's style of music was, and it would be put in a category. But I think nowadays there's such a blend, you know, that it's very hard to just put one style, you know, onto an artist's feel and flavor. And so, you know what, hey, I just call it musical storytelling because, you know, it feels that way for me. And when you write music, Dwight, what is your inspiration behind your sound?
Well, play what I like to hear, you know. I mean, I fool around with chords until I find chords that just sound like they belong together and just really kind of fascinate me. And then I figure, okay, I got to put some kind of, you know, lyrics and melody to it and just let it go like that. It's kind of, I guess, you know, the word might be organic. One thing you said, though, about genre, the song that you played at the top of the hour, Lady Midnight,
right.
I get so often, you know, hey, man, that's a country song. And I don't fuss with nobody, you know, I don't argue because it's like, you know, they're not complaining. They're just saying, you know, that that's the sound. But when I wrote it, I didn't write it to be a country song. And I keep remembering a song I heard by the Pointer Sisters ages ago. It seems like around the time they invented dirt, called Slow Hand, you know.
Right.
And I listened to the Pointer Sisters version, and that's, you know, again, that's something that you'd call, you know, soul pop or what have you. And I listened to it stripped down by a different singer, and it's sure enough, you know, country. So I figured, you know, like, so to me, it's like Lady Midnight, you know, it's, if, for instance, if someone like Ronnie Millsap sang it, then you could hear the country come right out, you know? But,
right,
you know, if maybe somebody like Joe, you know, like Joe Monty sang it, because, you know, she's more of a jazz nut, you know?
Okay.
She'd take it, you know, in a different direction, you know? So, there you have that.
So at what point in your life did you really, you know, decide to get into music and take it seriously?
Well, I always liked it. And I guess, again, Bob Dylan, but, you know, when I was 15, I had a bunch of friends who were all musicians, and they kept promising to set me on my lyrics to music. And finally, I got tired of them promising to set my lyrics to music and never getting time to do it, so I did it my damn self.
Right. Okay. And when was the first time that you actually performed in front of people?
There used to be an open mic at Stony Brook University, or around a corner from Stony Brook University, anyway. And I used to back on Long Island in New York. And I used to go out there and perform. That was in, my goodness gracious alive, 71.
Okay.
I don't know, back in the early 70s, I guess. You know, I used to, you know, and I tell you, I mean, I sounded like a broken foghorn in heat. I really did. But I didn't let a little thing like having a lousy singing voice stop me. I just kept at it.
Okay, you know? Well, we're going to leave that up to you, because, you know, I'm not going to ever step out there and try to sing. We'll leave that up to you. And but,
well,
you know
Susan, Lady Flavor, I'll tell you.
You can call me Susan, Lady Flavor, whatever you want.
What, you know, down the road, I eventually found out that it's really something simple. You know, someone told me, if you're not tone deaf, mm-hmm, you can sing. And it's really that simple. You know, he didn't say that, you know, that if you're not tone deaf, you're going to be Luciano Pavarotti.
Right.
But he said, if you're not tone deaf, if you can carry a tune, you know, it may not be easy at first, you know, and you may not be real good at it, but as long as you're not tone deaf, you can teach yourself to sing.
Hmm. Well,
and
you know,
what happened with me was that at one point I actually took lessons for about a quick minute.
Well, you did.
And
okay.
Learned how to breathe from my diaphragm instead of singing from the back of my throat.
Mm-hmm.
And went on from there.
Okay. Well, I'm going to stick to the shower and the car singing. and you can just continue, you know, singing and breathing through your diaphragm, you know, because, yeah. That's why I'm the one that waves the leopard pom-poms to Dwight. And you get all
right.
And ride and all that great stuff. So, yeah, we're going to leave that up to you guys.
You know, I didn't know until maybe 3 or 4 years ago that panthers are leopards.
I did hear that actually recently.
And that they've actually got
spots.
But it's like, you know, if you get close enough to if you're close enough to see them, you know, you wind up lunch.
I love
but,
leopards.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from, and I do see that you have a black panther as, you know, your default, and, you know, so where did that all come up for you?
I've always loved the big cats, you know, the giant cats, you know, your leopard, you know, your panther, you know. There's just something about them, you know, that's just elemental, you know. And when, I don't know, several years ago, 2003, somewhere around there, because I grew up, believe it or not, I grew up a dog lover. But somewhere around 2003, a neighbor of mine had to get rid of his cat, and I took it in because, you know, I mean, I like animals, period. Quite honestly, I like them a lot better than most people. But I took this cat in, and, you know, really enjoyed having a cat around. And then I got these two pains in the behind that are with me to this day, Butch and Sundance. and believe me, they turned out to have the right names. I'm telling you.
Okay.
But you know, I've just after living with you know, with Butch and Sundance, you know, for so long, and looking at their mannerisms and watching a lot of nature shows. I love nature shows. And seeing it, you know, the mannerisms in, like, you know, panthers, leopards, cheetahs, lions, you know, it's like they really are. Your little common house cat is you know, the only difference between, you know the little, you know, the little putty tat around the house, and the gorgeous animal, you know, the cougar, you know, that's roaming the mountain range is size. You know, they behave exactly the same. You know, they've got the same habits, and yeah. But
no, I was wondering, you know, what the Black Panther thing was for you, because, you know, I so love leopards and leopard and all of that. That's my big thing. So, yeah, I have always meant to ask you that question. But you know what? We've got only about 12 minutes left in the show, so I definitely want to play another track of yours. Do you have a request of one of them that you want me to play, Dwight, or should I pick?
You know, I like End It All Over Again.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to play End It All Over Again by my special guest tonight, Dwight Hobbs. All over. over again by my special featured guest tonight, Dwight Hobbs, singer, songwriter, writer. I didn't say writer. And author.
That's
I still
Jeff
think that you're a journalist.
Well, okay. That's Jeff Baudet Christensen on acoustic guitar doing that miraculous
okay.
solo in the middle. And okay. Jeff is an incredible artist. He has been touring with the reassembled band Crow. And Jeff, the guy's a prince. He came in and played that solo on it. And singing with me on that is Alicia Wiley. She's a local kind of icon. And it really, actually, where I got the name for the CD, once I finally finished the doggone thing, Dwight Hobbs and the All-Star Hired Guns featuring Alicia Wiley, is because everybody who's on the on that particular cut has got a heavy name here in the Twin Cities. You know, you don't
okay.
they aren't known outside of town. But and that cut with Stan Kipper on timbales and vocals, and Chico Perez on congas, and Johannes Tona on bass. That song is always going to be one of my favoritest in the whole universe.
Okay. So Dwight, do you have any specific links where your music can be found and purchased?
CD baby. You know, if you look for them under the title, because there two of them are available now on CD baby, Lady Midnight. If you just look for Lady Midnight on CD Baby, you'll find it. And if you look for End It All Over Again on CD Baby, you'll find it. You'll find Lady Midnight under Dwight Hobbs on CD Baby. You'll find End It All Over Again under what did I say? Dwight Hobbs and the All Star Hired Guns featuring Alicia
mm-hmm.
Wiley.
Okay. So I want you to know that your publisher's been in the chat room and definitely giving you props and
Anura?
Giving us yes.
Far out.
Yeah. And
he's
so
he's a special kind of guy. He really is. He and of course I love his taste in writers, you know. He really is a special kind of guy. Yeah.
Well,
he's
definitely giving you your props and respect out there, and I think that's a wonderful thing when you have, you know, people that are a part of your team. You know, I think it's really something that's necessary for your team to have a love and a respect and an appreciation for what it is the artist is trying to do. And definitely, just from the statements he's putting in the chat room and everything, you know, he has a great respect for you as an artist and as a man. So big up to you, Dwight Hobbs, because I think that's something that's really, really important. So, you know, we've got 5 minutes left. And so why don't you just kind of briefly tell us, where do you want to go with your music, first of all?
Well, I would very much love to, get a hold of a publisher, you know, a music publisher. You know,
mm-hmm.
to market, Lady Midnight and a song that we didn't get a chance to listen to tonight called Angels Don't Really Fly. Those two have the best marketability of all my songs. And as I'm sure, you know, you're well aware, you know, if you place the right song on the right market with the right artist, you know, you've got yourself a great starting point in terms of, like, actually making a viable living at it, you know?
Sure.
So.
That's the trick, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
like,
well, yeah,
and
that's
right.
What I really would like to do with the music is find a good music publisher to,
right.
To place those two songs at, yeah.
Sure. So do you have more music within your soul that's going to be coming out and being produced here sometime in the near future?
Oh, I got a whole bunch of stuff.
Okay.
yeah. I've even started writing some new material after 20 years. It's funny. But I want to try and wrangle Roger back into the studio because he's got such a good feel for my material, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the focus right now, the primary focus right now, is like playing out at clubs once in a while, nailing down the book, you know, making that a reality, you know, and wrapping up the studio projects that are near completion. The CD Angels Don't Really Fly, I've decided to turn it into a single and just go with three songs, you know, two songs and a bonus track, you know, that kind of marketing thing. And then at Beat Bad Records, my old producer, Barry Knodel, we've got enough material to put out an EP. So that's the long and the short of it.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, what is your goal on how you're going to market your music to your writing to your book?
Oh, that, I've decided to really work closely with Honora in terms of like just listening to his experience because Papyrus Publishing has about a good half dozen, if not more, you know, titles out there.
Okay.
And I think it behooves me to listen to where he has pitched, you know, his other authors. And I've got myself a little shopping list that I've been putting together of people on the internet, you know, who have responded, you know, to my essays and said, you know, that they like them. So it'll be kind of a guerrilla tactic, you know, kind of beating the bushes.
Sure. One place I definitely would suggest as far as, you know, putting out information, or maybe what I could do is once I read your book, I'll do a review on it and take it over to a website that's called Goodreads. And it's a great place. It's where people who are interested in literature and finding out about books and what books, you know, people, you know, are reading. They also have, like, book clubs over there, too. You know, book reviewers can post reviews and this and that and the other, but it's strictly around literature, and I think it's an amazing tool, you know, when it comes to just being able to, you know, post about your book and, you know, have reviews and, you know, people who are looking for literature, you know, to read, that's where they go. So now, Anur also says that you are working on a play about the Negro Baseball League.
My new play called Ella Stanley. It's based on Effa Manley, who was the who in the old Baseball Negro League. She was the only, to my knowledge, the only female owner in the old Negro baseball leagues, who was also a social activist. She was committed to civil rights well before it was you know, noted in the in the big media. I mean, you know, before Martin Luther King Jr. basically put the civil rights struggle on the international map, give or take about 20 years before, Effa Manley, as owner of the I forget the it was a Newark Eagles, I'm not sure, but she was a really serious gal, you know, and I just finished the second draft of a play about that's based on her. It's based on her the way the guy who wrote The Great White Hope based his character on Jack Johnson. You know,
okay.
So it's not literally the story of Effa Manley, which is why I changed the name to Ella Stanley.
Okay.
But you know, so it's close enough that you know who I'm referring to, but you know, her estate can't sue me if I get something wrong. You know, and you know, and if I don't, and I'm not limited, you know, to absolute historical accuracy. I can simply take the character and go with her commitment to community, and put her in a scenario whereby I bring out a woman's commitment to community, you know, and attribute it to my fictional character, Ella Stanley, and you'll see that I'm paying tribute to Effa Manley.
Okay. Okay. Stephen Jerome Ferguson was just saying that the NBL Museum in Kansas City is a good place to pop the play. So, anyway, I just thought I would.
I went down there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, you know what, Dwight? This hour went by very fast, my friend, and I knew that it would. So definitely towards the end of the year, if you want, we can definitely reschedule this.
I'd love to come back
and talk about your book and play some more of your music. But, you know, you will definitely be hearing Dwight Hobbs here on Flavor News Radio along with Soul City Radio out of Baltimore, Writings Radio out of London, UK, and KLSL Liquid Soul out of the Pacific Northwest. It is a thrill to be able to share your flavor, Dwight. And I'm so honored to have you on tonight to just get a little, just touch on. I feel like we just touched on, you know, your story. And I know that you've got so much more that you can share with the listeners of my radio shows. And I look forward to you coming back, you know, in the very, very near future so we can continue this conversation. But you know what? This is someplace you are always welcome, Dwight, you know, to call into any of the shows to do a feature again. And, you know, I'm going to continue playing your music.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
You are so very welcome, my friend. So I want to thank everybody who tuned in to listen to the show live, the many that hung out on the phone lines listening, to those that were listening in the wings, and to those that came into the chat room. This was a special night for me. This is my very first on the leopard carpet since my two-year anniversary, and also since I turned Flavor News Radio into a members-only radio station. So help spread the word about what we're doing with underground independent artists, and definitely help spread the word about this feature that we did with Dwight Hobbs tonight. Once the archives will be available, you can definitely shoot it out to your people and have them come back and check out this amazing, amazing interview with him. So I'm going to close out tonight's show with a piece that Dwight Hobbs spoke on, and this is called Angels Really Don't Fly. Thank you so much, Dwight, for coming on the show with me tonight.
My pleasure.
She's pretty as a picture, be careful taking in the view. So blinded by her beauty, your vision gets the best of you. Between your images and expectations must be nothing. Just an expression. She really didn't fall from the sky. So please don't get that impression. She knows she's already tried. Angels don't really fly. No, no, no. Still you wonder when she'll stay. A brand new moment is barely dawning. Best you now be on your way. And remember, angels don't really fly, no. It's just an expression. She really didn't fall from the sky, so please don't get that impression. She knows she's already tried. Angels don't really fly. No, no, no. Living just an expression. She really didn't fall from the sky. So please don't get that impression. She knows she's already tried. Angels don't really fly. No, no, no.
Have been listening to On the Leopard Carpet with Lady Flava. My special guest tonight was singer-songwriter, playwright, author, musician, just so many creative things that come from this amazing talent, Dwight Hobbs. Google him. He is definitely very Googleable. Go check out his music over at CD Baby. I definitely play his music here on my radio shows. And then, you know, stay tuned for his book that will be coming out possibly the end of this year called Something I Said. Take care. God bless. And again, help spread the word about what we're doing here at Flava News Radio.